In President Obama's State of the Union address, he announced the upcoming end of U.S. involvement in Afghanistan and received great applause. But the consequences of our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are just beginning to unfold. Recently, the family of a slain Iraqi U.S. interpreter managed finally to resettle here in San Diego. KPBS Fronteras reporter Jill Replegal tells us the story of that U.S. interpreter whose real name was Muhammad.
They called the lanky, too young-looking teenager Roy. During 9 months of firefights, raids on enemy compounds, and long nights on watch in Iraq, Roy interpreted the country's language and culture for the platoon led by U.S. Army Captain Blake Hall. He helped Hall identify the signs of a hostile neighborhood and impending attacks. The two became very close. Hall admired Roy's witty one-liners, but even more so, his bravery.
Not allowed to carry a weapon in combat. And still, you know, with bullets flying overhead, faithfully doing his job right by my side, I don't think I'm that brave. I know I'm not that brave.
When Hall's tour was over, Roy wasn't yet eligible for a special visa offered to Iraqis who worked with U.S. forces. He still had 3 months of combat work left. So Hall returned to the U.S. and began the paperwork to bring Roy over. Then one day, he got an email. Roy was dead. Killed in a bombing along with six American soldiers.
I felt like I'd just been punched in the stomach.
Hall says he spent the next 18 months numb, trying to process his combat experience and his loss. One thing kept nagging him, his promise to Roy.
And ultimately I decided I needed to find his mom just to tell her how important he was to us and how special he was. Really, in some ways, to ask her for her forgiveness. I still felt very guilty about leaving him behind. He's the only member of my platoon I didn't bring back.
After much searching, Hall finally got in touch with Roy's mom. She didn't hate him, as he had feared, but she and her family were in danger. Iraqis seen as U.S. collaborators are potential targets for insurgents. Hall vowed to get them out of Iraq. He worked with pro bono lawyers and the nonprofit Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project. When things seemed to stall, he called legislators and went to the media. Hall says the long wait is unacceptable.
And every one of them that's hunted down, every one of them that has to live in danger or has their quality of life diminished because they served with Americans, it's a tarnish to our national honor.
According to the Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project, Iraqis who worked for the U.S. and their families, if they apply for refugee consideration in Iraq, will have to wait 18 months just to get an initial interview. And it still takes at least a year after that before they complete the process and potentially get on a plane. In Afghanistan, under a special visa program for Afghans who have worked for the U.S. government, there's a backlog of 5,000 applications just to apply for the program. Roy's family waited nearly 2 years to get refugee status, and now we're at the San Diego airport waiting to meet them. Roy's aunt and grandmother are already here. They left Iraq several years ago and now live in San Diego. Roy's cousin, who was also a military interpreter in Iraq, has flown in from El Paso, Texas, to be part of the greeting committee.
Yeah, they're coming.
Airport construction drowns out their arrival. Hugs and kisses are passed around. Roy's parents, his 11-year-old sister and 22-year-old brother, the family looks exhausted. They've been traveling for nearly 40 hours. At the apartment where they're staying, the women bring out plates of food, rice croquettes stuffed with ground beef and almonds, and a kind of Iraqi pizza. They order us to feast. As it is for most refugees, finally arriving in a new country is a mixed bag.
Happy or sad?
This is Roy's mother. Her name and those of the rest of Roy's family will remain anonymous. Other members of the family are still in Iraq.
I happy to future of my children, but I'm sad to future of my country. It's bad, really bad.
In the next few weeks, a local refugee resettlement agency will help the family get oriented, find an apartment, get Roy's sister enrolled in school, and help his father start looking for jobs. For now, Roy's family is relieved to be safe, and they credit Hall for that. The family's first night in the U.S. wears on. In the morning, they'll start the rest of their lives. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replegal.
Joining me now in studio is Roy's cousin, Ibrahim, who was also a translator. Ibrahim, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And on the phone is Katie Reisner. She's National Policy Director of the Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project. Katie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Maureen. Thanks for having me.
Ibrahim, how is Royce and your family, how are they settling here in San Diego?
They're kind of excited. It's their first day in the U.S. I mean, their second day today. They're really excited. They have no fears anymore. They don't have any anxiety, any kind of fears from the insurgency to be followed. They're really happy. I'm really happy for Blake and everything he have done for the family. I mean, without him and without his contact, it would be impossible. It's been about 2 years, and we've been working on the paper. We've done everything, but in the end, I mean, it worked out.
You're talking about the Army Captain Blake Hill, who helped your family get over here. What sort of danger did they face back in Iraq?
Well, they faced all kind of danger because Roy, he was in a combat and he was like in constantly missions with a Blake recon, and they went to like the most hostile area in Baghdad, and we call it the Wild West. That place was like full of insurgency, and he was detaining and getting like really, really bad people from the street, picking up those people. Those people, they were like still pissed off. They were mad at like Roy. Even after his death, the family's still in danger. They want to like still like revenge from what he did and from the target he picked up from the street.
Now, Katie, let me go to you for a moment. When did you receive Roy's case, and when you did get it, was it a kind of a textbook case that was clear cut, or were there snags?
Sure. The Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project first received Roy's family's case in September 2010. The legal team was able to submit the application for them in April 2011. The case was common in some ways and uncommon in others. It's incredibly uncommon for a family like Roy's to have a legal team preparing their applications and, you know, accounting for every detail, collecting new evidence. And it's incredibly uncommon for a family like Roy's to have an advocate of the caliber of Army Captain Blake Hall. We think that these two things account for another uncommon fact about the family, which is that they waited a relatively short period of time between the time that their application was submitted and the time that they had their screening interview with the U.S.
But 2 years is a short time?
Astonishingly, yes, that falls on the lower end of the spectrum of time that an application is in wait. The time that the family waited between the time that the application was submitted and the time of the interview was 6 months. Usually that period is 16 to 18 months. So the wait time is usually considerably longer.
How long, Ibrahim, did it take you to get your visa to come to the United States?
It didn't take me that long. I applied for the SIV, which is the Special Immigrant Visa. I was working at the time with the military, so they have my background, they have all the stuff ready. So it took me, I would say, 6 to 3 months. It wasn't that long at all.
So is it fair to say, Katie, that the U.S. interpreters themselves don't have to wait that long to get into the country, but if they want to take their families or have family members accompany them, that's what takes the time?
I don't think so. You know, every case is different. There's mm-hmm. a really wide variety of cases. But typically in the type of admissions program that Roy's family benefited from, there's a tremendous backlog, it's thousands of individuals in the pipeline, and again the typical wait time is 2 to 3 years. For the special immigrant visa program that Ibrahim came over on, In Iraq, again, the wait times are many years. In Afghanistan, also many years. We've had individuals who submitted applications, you know, in 2009 and are still waiting for any sign of progress on their applications.
Ibrahim, what do you hear from friends and relatives now in Iraq? How secure is it for people who are just trying to live their everyday lives?
It's getting me sad. I mean, after all the sacrifices from the Iraqi army and the interpreters and the U.S. military, I have friends I have lost overseas. And after all, I mean, we secured Iraq. I mean, the plan with General Petraeus, when he did it, it worked like perfectly. But in the end, like, it get me sad after, like, we start pulling out of Iraq. Now, all of a sudden, like, the militia start coming up, showing up, assassinations against, like, young kids. They detain without, like, any evidence, without anything. They just, like, it's sad. It's sad after all those people, what we have done, and all the blood we put in. I mean, it just, the situation has gone really bad right now.
Now, your family is overjoyed to finally be here, be in the United States, but it must be something of a bittersweet joy as well. I mean, they had to leave their home. They had to leave their nation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I mean, they left everything behind. They left friends, family, their homes, their houses. They just got their stuff together. They packed it up, and they just flew. I got Roy's a brother. He even left his graduation. He was about to graduate within a month or 2 months, I believe. He left it, and he just got in the plane, and he left. I mean, I told him, I don't want to take no more chances. I mean, if anything happened to you guys, I mean, I wouldn't forgive myself about it.
Katie, let me ask you to go over that one more time about there is a similar situation now in Afghanistan as the U.S. begins to pull out of that country and the people who have been known to give assistance to the United States want to come to the United States. What kind of backlog did you say there was again?
That's right. There's a similar program in Afghanistan that enables folks who've worked for the U.S. government and their families to come over to the United States if they've been persecuted. Current estimates of the backlog there are on the order of 5,000 to 6,000 documentarily complete applications that are just waiting. Unfortunately, of the 8,500 applications that were created by legislation, 8,500 visas that were created by legislation, something on the order of 500 have been granted. So the program is basically at a stalemate. What's unfortunate is that what happened in Iraq was that the program there was initially also at a stalemate, but after it became clear the scale of the threats faced by the U.S. Iraqi allies and their families, then the special immigrant visa program and the related refugee programs, additional resources were dedicated to them, and the program sped up.
Okay.
However, many deaths could have been prevented had the program been better functioning prior to the troop drawdown. In Afghanistan, the troops are drawing down, and we have the opportunity to prevent the same thing in Afghanistan.
I've been speaking with former U.S. Iraqi interpreter Ibrahim and Katie Reisner, National Policy Director of the Iraqi Refugee Assistance Project. Thank you both very much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Maureen.
Coming up, it's the weekend preview here on KPBS.